When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
The hardest thing about Channel Swim training, I would say, apart from the fact I was utterly terrified, or 99% of it, is the fact that it's you and your brain, you and your mind, and that is it. I always found it interesting that people would say every time they looked at their stoma after their surgery at the beginning, it would make them upset and resentful. And very, very early on, I decided that I wasn't going to go down that path. I am going to see this stoma every single day for the rest of my life. And if I'm going to associate that physical sight with the trauma, I'm never going to get past this.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Raffaella, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Stoma for Life here on UK Health Radio. Life often takes us on paths we could never have predicted. When the unexpected happens, we are faced with the choice. Do we allow it to defeat us, leaving us in denial because it wasn't part of the life we had planned, or do we find the strength to adapt and even thrive? On this show, I have spoken with many ostomates, people whose stoma resulted from cancer or gut health issues or autoimmune conditions. In most of those stories, the stoma was a distant possibility, but not an immediate shock. But imagine this. You're welcoming the birth of your child, expecting one of the greatest celebrations, only to experience a traumatic complication that leaves you with a stoma. That's the reality my guest today had to face. And before I introduce you to her, I want you to try something. The next time you step into a warm shower, turn the temperature down to about 17 degrees Celsius, the temperature of the English Channel on the 12th of September, 2023. Then imagine not just stepping into that cold, but staying immersed in it for nearly 14 hours and swimming in it. This is the endurance, the determination, and the grit behind today's guest. Many of you will already know her name, Jill Castle. She is a remarkable advocate, a record-setting athlete, and a charity founder. In 2023, she became the first woman with a stoma to complete a solo swim of the English Channel, finishing in 13 hours and 53 minutes, a feat recognized by the Guinness World Records. But Jill's story goes far beyond athletic achievement. She is the founder and chief executive of the Chameleon Buddies, a charity supporting children and adults with stomas and leading initiatives for women in Kenya by obstetric fistula. She's an advocate for the Birth Trauma Association and the MISAC Foundation, giving a voice to those who have experienced severe trauma during childbirth, patron of Butney Bear, providing comfort to children and families in medical need, and Director of the Global Maternity Alliance, working to improve maternal health worldwide. Jill Castle is proof that when life changes in ways you cannot predict, we have the power to meet it with courage, resilience, and purpose. So please do stay tuned. We'll be back shortly after this commercial break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I've been looking forward to this interview for a very long time. I first heard about today's guest when the media actually picked up on her story about swimming the English Channel, and I followed her journey ever since. So it's a real privilege to have her with us today. She's a world record holder, an advocate, and a charity founder. From a birth trauma that completely changed her life to becoming the first woman with a stoma to swim the English Channel, her story is remarkable. Jill Castle, welcome to Stoma for Life.
Hi, Rafaela. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to meet you and have a chat. But I am going to start with a correction.
Okay, please.
I am the first person to swim the English Channel with a stoma. The first woman. So I always like to say that.
Yeah.
That I beat the men.
Absolutely. That's a very valid point. Yes, obviously. Yeah, you're the first person to actually swim the English Channel. My goodness. Now, excuse me and thank you for clarifying.
That's all right. I correct everybody.
Yeah. Now, I'm not quite 4 years into my own stoma journey. So for many listening, I'm still fairly new at all of this myself. Now, when I first heard about your story, Jill, and the reason you received your stoma, I had to admit I actually felt quite naive, because having given birth to two children myself, I never connected stoma surgery with birth trauma. But you going public so openly about the whole conversation, not just about living with a stoma, but about living with one as a result of traumatic birth, I mean, that was just quite unique, I'd say. So perhaps you could take us through that part of your story.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you describe yourself as naive, but I was just as naive. I don't think people realise what the potentials are, you know, the potential complications of having a baby. So I gave birth to my son in 2011, my first and only child. Easy pregnancy, easy everything, actually, until it came to the birth. And then he decided to come 6 weeks early. And because he was early, it meant he was very small. He was only 4 pounds 7. And as a result of that, he got tired during the birth. He got stuck and it turned into an emergency situation when his heart rate crashed. And then the medics had to use forceps to get him out. When they did this, they caused me a lot of damage, but they did save his life. But unfortunately, they missed all the injuries that were caused to me. So it wasn't so much the fact that I got injured that was the issue. It was more the fact that they missed all the injuries that occurred. And it wasn't until about 5 days after the birth, when I'd collapsed in the corridor, having complained bitterly to the hospital and to midwives that I was in agony, I was doubly incontinent. And by the sort of the fifth or sixth day, I was barely able to communicate really the level of pain that I was in. I was found collapsed on the floor by a male midwife who told me that it was the perception of the pain. So basically the pain was in my head. Then I was examined under gas and air, and they realised that I had a missed fourth degree tear, which is when you're torn all the way through the rectum, the vagina, the internal and the external sphincter. I also had a very rare complication called a rectovaginal fistula. So a fistula is an abnormal connection in the body, and a stoma is actually a fistula because you're not meant to have that connection on your abdomen. And so I was pooing out of my vagina, and I also had a huge abscess around my sphincter, which had burst. All of this led to the emergency colostomy, which took place 7 days after the birth. It was meant to be for 12 weeks, but they realised that actually I was irreparable, so I had it for life.
Wow.
That's like in a nutshell of how to what 8 week. Oh, yeah.
I'm just trying to get my head around it because, you know, you walked around this for 5 days before they actually realised, and then it was actually a question. Well, you know, you're not coping well. Why?
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's your perception of it.
And, exactly. And I mean, for anybody that's had a child, especially the first child, you don't know what it's supposed to be like or feel like in any case. So it's all new from every side, every angle.
Yeah. And, you know, there's actually a lot of ego when it comes to babies and mothering. Nobody wants to admit that they're struggling and that it's painful and that it's hard and they don't think they can do it. So there's a lot of that going on in the background as well. And so then when you do finally have the courage to say, I am struggling, this is painful, this is not normal, and to be rebuffed, you know, that obviously sets the scene for a lot of mental health problems. So I was ultimately diagnosed with PTSD, severe anxiety. I lived in a state of hypervigilance. I lost my job as a police officer. You know, it was a really difficult time, and part of that was because I wasn't believed, and that, you know, when you're very vulnerable. So my whole life sort of tipped upside down and back to front and was completely unrecognizable.
Absolutely.
At that time.
And you had a newborn as well. I mean, you had to come to terms.
I had a newborn. Yep. And my husband is a diver, so he works away from home for long periods of time. And I was actually living in Leeds at the time, which is 150 miles south of Northumberland, where all my family and all his family was based. So I was trying to manage that on my own when he was away. So it was just very tricky.
Yeah, I believe so, because having had stoma surgery myself, obviously, you know, you're sort of dealing with your own feeling, perception, and everything with this new way of life, and then you've still got to care for a newborn, which is challenging in every sense as well. And you said it was premature as well, so obviously that goes hand in hand. And my goodness, just like my listeners, I'm first of all stunned, but I'm not lost for words, because obviously I want to know more about this. Because how did you cope with that shock of suddenly living with a stoma, and then who was there to aid you? What help did you get or could you find?
So it was my mum who came to stay with me for a few weeks because my husband had to go back to work quickly. Mm. And my husband, of course, when he was home, was fantastic. It was very much a hands-on dad. He's a very sort of quiet, solid man who just let me kind of work it out for myself, but always being there. Because often, you know, when you're going through these periods of great trauma, you can't actually articulate what it is that you want or what you need. You actually sometimes just need a bit of space to work that out for yourself and for your body and your mind to recover. I think in a funny way, because I just had a baby, it made me cope a little bit better, because anybody who has had a baby, your life changes just irrevocably overnight, regardless of whether it's a good birth or a bad birth or anything happens or not. You know, you go from walking down the stairs and picking up your car keys, getting into your car and going to the supermarket, to, you know, you've got to change the baby, and then they have an explosion in the nappy, and then you've got to come back in. And, you know, so because it all happened at once, it was just part of my life changing. And also, I had a baby that I had to feed and I had to look after. I had to get up for, I had to be present for. So he was a reason to keep going, because I had to. And lots of people say, how did you manage it? And I always say, because you've got no other choice.
Yeah.
You have to. But I always found it interesting that people would say, every time they looked at their stoma after their surgery at the beginning, it would make them upset and resentful. And very, very early on, I decided that I wasn't going to go down that path, because I thought to myself, I am going to see this stoma every single day for the rest of my life. And if I'm going to associate that physical site with the trauma, I'm never going to get past this. So at the very beginning, I did sort of try and take that little bit of control back, because I knew that was really, really, really important. But in terms of what other help I got, I mean, the difficulty was I moved away from Leeds back up to Northumberland after 7 or 8 months, and I was lost from the system. The NHS up here didn't even know that I had a stoma, so I didn't have anybody up here initially. Yeah, I just sort of muddled along, to be honest. Yeah. And it wasn't until I met somebody from Dansac. I don't even know how this happened, but I found a nurse from Dansac who came round and changed my bags to convex, which stopped my leaking. And then once my bags stopped leaking, I was able to sort of think, right, okay, this doesn't really need to destroy my life as much as I felt it was at the time.
Yeah. You've said two very profound things that I would like to touch on, because you said you made a conscious decision on how you're going to look at your stoma. And I think that is just so important, because with anything like where we put our or we focus our attention on, be it positive or negative attention, that's where your energy flows. And if you're obviously seeing it in a positive light, your whole outlook will become positive, because like you said, like myself, this is a permanent situation, and it is just so much better for anybody listening now. Not everything is hunky-dory all the time, but it depends on how you approach the subject. And if you do it in a positive manner, it leaps you, it catapults you in a different sphere, I'd say, to those that see it as a burden and negative all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And it's all about controlling the controllables. You know, there was nothing I could do about the fact that I had a stoma. Yeah. So I had to accept it.
Yeah.
Like you just have to accept that. You just have to get on with that. Now, that doesn't mean to say I embraced it. That's a totally different thing, which we'll come on to.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how I started off.
So there was a moment, obviously, when you said, I can live with this and I can still do amazing things, but just talk to us about the embracing stuff, because that makes me curious.
So I was in a hospital waiting area again, because my fistula was infected for a year, wasn't repaired for a year. So I was in and out, in and out. And it was probably 3 years afterwards, and I was back in the hospital again, can't remember why. And I read a magazine that just happened to be lying there, and in the magazine was an interview with an athlete who had a stoma, and she was a triathlete. Now, up until that point, I'd had the fear of God drummed into me by all stoma, like everybody, that you'll get a hernia if you do anything really energetic. So I was frightened to do anything apart from walking. I didn't think I could lift heavy things, all that kind of, you know, I was kind of protecting myself. And anybody who's had a stoma or got a stoma, we have it as a result of trauma. We've spent long periods of time in hospital, and therefore you will do whatever it takes not to go back in. And that includes not getting a hernia. But then that kind of opened my eyes, and I thought, oh, actually, if she can do a triathlon, then surely I can do things like cycling and swimming and, you know, take part in events like that. And that was really what changed my life at that moment, because it opened my eyes to what the possibilities were. And there's that brilliant saying, which you can't be what you don't see. Mm-hmm. And once I saw that possibility, I thought, right. And by that point, you know, my bags weren't leaking. I had adjusted very well to having a stoma. And I just thought, right, this is the next part of your life. You know, I had a period of time of a good year or so where I couldn't walk properly, couldn't sit down properly, couldn't do stuff that I wanted to do because of my physical abilities. And I thought, actually, I don't want to waste any more time. I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Let's just get out there and see what I'm capable of. And my biggest driving force always and forever is my son. It's never been a secret that, you know, it was his birth that resulted in my colostomy. And it's always been really important to me to show him that it hasn't ruined my life. Never want him to be sitting in his bedroom thinking, oh, well, mum lost her job and she's been really miserable ever since. And that's just not the case. So that's a big driver for me as well. And yeah, that was it. I joined the like started doing indoor cycling classes, which were exhausting. I was so overweight, I was so unfit, I was so worried about my bag making a noise, about the smell if I went to the toilet, about it rubbing against my leg, all of these things. But I thought, well, the quickest way to fail is to not start. So I just went. I didn't finish the first class because I was too tired. I could only stand up for one rotation and just went from there. Went from
Now,
there, did loads of things.
the article you read about the triathlete, it wasn't by any chance Caroline Bramwell.
I don't know who it was. Everybody asks me, like, who was it? And I'm like, I really don't know. I mean, it could, there are so many amazing triathletes out there with.
I thought that was just so inspiring. Like you said, you get told from the onset, be careful. Don't lift anything heavier than, I don't know, a washing bag or something. But it actually, when you take care and when you are in the right setting and do it, well, I can only presume the way you said, you started slowly, you have to start slowly, then the sky's the limit, which you've clearly proven.
Well, that's it. And every little step that you do gives you that little bit more confidence. And I'd always wanted to do a triathlon when I was younger, but I never thought I'd be able to do one. And after that point, I just thought, well, stuff it. What's the worst that can happen? I don't finish. Like, nothing that I do or don't do now is going to be as bad as what I've just been through. And I got through that. So, and I literally have not looked back.
So, did you actually participate in a triathlon?
I did a sprint triathlon, a couple of sprints, and then I did a standard, and then I did the half Ironman. I have no desire to do an Ironman. Quite frankly, I can't be bothered to commit that much training. I'm never going to commit that much training to anything ever again, especially after the channel. I've kind of been there, done that, ticked the list. So yeah, I did a half Ironman. I've been skydiving, qualified as a scuba diver, done endurance races. Yeah, I've had loads of different jobs, done loads of different things, like a tour guide, and I've become a swimming teacher and a lifeguard. Work in a pet shop. It's just try everything, really.
Now let's talk about the channel swim. Now, what made you actually take something so extreme on? Was it always on your radar, or
No.
did you just think it's a personal challenge?
No, it's all a bit silly, really. So after everything I went through, I was desperately trying to regain some sort of control over my life. And fear is something that can control what you will or you won't do. And I've always been absolutely terrified of the sea because I watched Jaws, and I only live about 10 minutes from the coast up here. And when I had to do the half Ironman triathlon, that involved an open water swim, which I was terrified of. But I am a good swimmer, and I managed to sort of tackle the lake and get it over and done with. But then I thought, no, actually, I'm sick of the fact that I'm so scared of the sea that I'm not going back into the sea because I used to love it. So I thought, right, I'm going to beat this fear of the sea, and that's basically what I did. Long story short, I couldn't open my eyes without having a panic attack, and took me a year and a half before I could open my eyes. Blah 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 blah. Finally, sort of managed to get out of my depth with people always in the same two beaches, and that was kind of the stage that I was at. I'd swum about a mile in the sea close to shore, and I met somebody else, a girl called Kaylee, who was a GB triathlete before she had her stoma surgery. Met her on Instagram, and she just casually said to me in a message one day on Instagram, because she'd done a channel relay when she was a teenager before her surgery, and she just said, "Have you ever thought about swimming the channel?" And I was like, "No, like, why would I want to swim the English Channel? I mean, that's just Like, ridiculous. But then the very next thought was me thinking, what an amazing way to raise awareness of all these women are injured in traumatic births, about showing people with a stoma you can swim, because I'm sure many of your listeners are worried about swimming with a stoma. It's like, it seems to be one of the top concerns that people have, and raise a bit of money for some charity. So I basically said, right, I'm going to do it, put it all over social media. Then I investigated what's actually involved in swimming the English Channel, and I was utterly horror-struck and terrified. That's like an understatement. I mean, there are very strict rules about swimming the Channel. There are two organisations that are in charge of it, the Channel Swimming Association and the CSPF, Channel Swimming Pilots Federation. And basically, you can only wear a swimming costume, a swimming hat, goggles, and earplugs. Once you set off from Dover to swim the 21 miles to France, you can't stop. If you stop, you get swept by the tide and you'll never make it. You can't get on the boat. You can't have a rest. You're fed with a fishing reel off the side of the boat. The average time is 15 to 16 hours. You set off at any time of the night or day, because of course at the beginning I was like, well, I'm not swimming at night.
Right. Yeah.
I'm
Of
just not swimming
course.
at
Of
night.
course.
So it's very, there's a very short season as well. It goes from beginning of June till the end of September, and there's basically like a 2.5 year, 3 year waiting list. So I then had to get a place, and then I had to wait 2.5 years. But also at that time, I had a rotator cuff injury, which is a shoulder injury, so I couldn't swim. So I had to have 8 months of physio before I could even lift my arm. I mean, the odds were very, very, very much stacked against me.
Absolutely. And I know the exact date because that's my wedding anniversary, the 12th of September.
Yeah.
And I know, like you said, there's this window that you had to meet. And I think it was announced beforehand. And didn't you also do one try beforehand and then do another one? Wasn't it like that?
No, so what happens is you get your 7 day window with your pilot. Your pilot has four people to get to France and back in that 7 day window. And I was swimmer four. So he had to get swimmer one to France, bring them back, swimmer two, blah, 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 blah. I was blown out of my first window. The weather was too bad. And I was told, you might not swim this year. So then I was devastated. Thought I would do a two-way Windermere, because I was like, I have to do something. And then I got a last minute call on about the 10th of September to say, right, you're on in a couple of days, come down to Dover. And so then I got my opportunity. You basically, your pilot checks the tides every 12 hours. And I was told at 6 o'clock in the morning on the Monday that I would be swimming that night at 9:30. And I
Oh,
was thinking, this is
I mean, that's the
literally
whole night through.
the whole night through. I
God, I mean, talk
know.
about facing your fears, you know?
Yeah, set off in the dark.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
I knew there was a lot of preparation, but I didn't know it was that intense and that long. And I also didn't know that you had this time frame also with the years that you have to apply in advance.
The training is unbelievable. I mean, I was swimming 5 times a week at the gym, twice a week. I was having massage, sports massages every week, acupuncture. You end at the very end of your all of your training on what we call the 7 and 6, and that is when you do 7 hours one day and then you swim for 6 hours the next day. And that's like the culmination of your training. So you're essentially swimming the length of the channel over a weekend. And I was doing up to 5 hour pool swims. You have to do a 6 hour qualifier to prove that you're capable of swimming the channel. But the hardest thing about channel swim training, I would say, apart from the fact I was utterly terrified for 99% of it, is the fact that it's you and your brain, you and your mind, and that is it. If you're doing long distance running, training, anything like that, you can talk to people, you can listen to music, you can do anything like that. But you can't do that because on the channel, you're not allowed to listen to anything. So it's all about training your mind. And if you let any negative thoughts in, that's you blown out the water, basically. It's 80% in your mind. So it's a really, really difficult thing to train
for.
You've got to make yourself have a strong mind.
I'm trying to picture this. How do you know, or how do you get your bearings? Obviously, you said you've got this pilot. Do you then also ask, how far am I in?
So you never ask.
Okay.
And they'll never tell you.
Okay.
You've got the big boat and you follow the boat.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
The only thing I said I wanted to know was when I was in French water.
Okay.
I was like, that'll give me a psychological boost. But also, there is no point in them telling you you have X number of miles to go because of the tides.
Okay.
Nobody could ever say you've got 2 hours left.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you just have to keep swimming until you get there.
Now, tell me, what was it like when you actually stepped onto French soil?
Incredible. The relief was like nothing I've ever experienced. If anybody's seen the video of me landing, you know, I collapsed on the floor and I started crying straight away. But this sounds really weird and it's really hard to explain to people. But the night that I did the swim, I'd had like 10 minutes before you get in the water, you get the warning from your pilot. And it's at that point that you get slathered in Vaseline and Cytochrome, which is the sunblock, and it's to stop chafing. And when my pilot said that, I had like some sort of like adrenaline attack, if you like. I was just drenched in adrenaline. I was shaking. I was trembling. My whole body was banging off the side of the boat. And then as soon as he said, right, get in, it just disappeared. It was like, well, it's a drug, isn't it? Adrenaline.
Yeah.
And I was just like, right, let's swim to France. I knew I was going to do it. I wasn't scared at all.
Wow.
Like in any way. And I remember standing on the beach in Dover in the dark and just thinking, right, let's swim to France. Mm. So when I landed in France, I was very relieved, but I wasn't surprised.
Yeah. Because you've put your mind to it.
Yeah, and I knew how important it was to be positive. And I was so grateful because I'd been blown out of my original window, and there was only about 3 weeks left of that season. So I was very lucky to get squeezed in. So, and I just kept thinking, God, you know, do you remember that year when you couldn't do anything? How lucky you are to be in the water swimming, how fortunate you are to be in this position, to be fit enough, to have the ability. You know, this is your moment. You'll never get this opportunity again. And it was the most incredible experience of my life. Yeah,
absolutely. And I mean, all of us, not just Ostermans, but everybody was cheering you on, because it's really quite an undertaking, quite an achievement. And I've got good goosebumps just listening to you explaining it and reliving it. And you've done so much for the Ostermy community, because like you said, there's so many Ostermans that don't even think they can swim or let alone do physical exercise like that. And I mean, you've just proved them all wrong.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it goes back to you can't be what you don't see.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to see other people embracing life, haven't you, for you to make it, you think it's possible. But I've always said this, and I remember being interviewed just after I'd done the swim, and they sort of said, what's important to you? And I said, you know, if one person who's got a stoma puts on a swimming costume and goes to their local pool after this, that's enough for me. And that's what it's about. It's not about people swimming the channel. It's not about people doing endurance events. Mm-hmm. It's about people enjoying the things that they did before. Yeah. And if that is going to the sauna, if that's lying in the bath, I didn't have a bath for about 3 years because I hated the bag flapping about in the water.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's what I want to encourage. It's not about record breaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about living a good life. And that's what it's about, isn't it?
Wow. I know you've created the charity, the Chameleon Buddies.
Yeah.
And I know you do a lot of work for the Birth Trauma Association. So maybe just touch on that, because I know that's extremely important to you, and what it all involves.
The Birth Trauma Association or?
Yes, both. And I know you do a lot of work in Kenya as well.
I do, yeah. So the Birth Trauma Association is a UK-based charity, which I'd never heard of. My girl's going through my own trauma, and I wish I had. They've got access to all the support and access to legal experts, to peer support, medical experts, you name it, they have it. And it's not just for the women that are traumatized through childbirth, it's for the families and the partners as well. So yeah, I've been an advocate for them for a very long time and raised a lot of money for them. And obviously for me, that's like a major part of my life, is raising awareness of women injured in childbirth. But that then ultimately led to my charity, Chameleon Buddies, which, like you've just pointed out, is based in Kenya. It's a bit of a long story, so I won't really go, we won't have time for me to fully explain the background behind the charity. But suffice to say, I discovered that in Kenya, they don't have access to proper stoma bags and supplies and nurses like we do in the UK. As we all know here, we have a limited amount of stoma supplies. You have your stoma reversed, or somebody dies and leaves behind stoma supplies, or your stoma changes size and shape or whatever, and you can't send these stoma bags back. So we take them and we send them to the women in Kenya, who are using things like crisp packets, bread packets, tin cans, whatever they can find.
My God.
But we also, which is really important to me, is provide peer support. So we provide peer support groups for them so that they don't think that they're alone, so that they've got their own community. And we've just employed our own, well, we've just employed someone for the first time in Kenya, who's a Kenyan ostomate, Nivia, who has got a urostomy, and she's now in charge of distributing all the bags and in charge of coordinating the peer support groups. So that was started in 2022. And the reason that we're called Chameleon Buddies is because I believe that people are like chameleons, and we can adapt to changes in our circumstances and changes in our situations like a chameleon. And as a charity, what we do is we buddy up with women to support them to ch adapt to changes in their life following stoma surgery or childbirth injury. So that's like in a nutshell what we do. But with the youngest that we support is 9 months old. She's 9 months old, and then the oldest is 76. So we literally support everybody.
Everybody, yeah. Now, just share the social media or the website pages where people can get hold of you, and perhaps also contribute to what you've just pointed out. You take those supplies and you take them actually there where they are needed.
Yes, and we spend about £1,500 every 2 months sending out these supplies. So that's how much it costs us. So it's chameleonbuddies.org.uk. That's the website. Chameleon_buddies is on Instagram. Or you can find me, which is stoma_chameleon on Instagram and Facebook. And chameleon is Chameleon, because I've realised nobody can spell it.
Excellent. And I can just well, animate my listeners to check it out, and yes, take to heart what you've said. Also support that, not just on a financial point of or level, but also with bag supplies,
Yes.
bags that are left over through reversal or whatever case it may be. So
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. And we're also climbing Kilimanjaro in October.
Absolutely. I was just about to say
Yeah.
that you are preparing to climb the roof of Africa.
Yeah, so
Tell
when
us.
I was doing all my swimming training, I was thinking to my next challenge, and I was thinking, I don't want to do something that's just me on my own. Obviously, you've got a crew for the channel, etc., but mentally on your own. I want to do something with other people. I want to give other people the opportunity to go out of their comfort zone and to experience something life-changing. So I decided that I would organize a trek for women. I'm calling it a female empowerment trek. And the only requirements were that you either suffered a traumatic birth, or you had a stoma, or you had a connection to somebody in those situations. So we've got 16 of us climbing. I think there's eight of us with stomas, urostomies, colostomies, ileostomies, a few people with birth trauma, some of us with both. And yeah, so we're doing that on the 5th of October this year, and we are raising funds to build a new dedicated stoma wing at the Gynecare Hospital in Eldoret in Kenya, which is where our charity is mainly based. And it's going to be amazing. I mean, some of them, well, vast majority of them, especially the ones with stomas, have never done anything like this before, ever. One had never even been out of Europe. Vast majority have never been to Africa. They've never trekked like this. Yeah. You know, it's really, really going to be a big, big challenge, but it's going to be amazing. Yeah.
It sounds absolutely fantastic. And how long do you think it will take? 4 or 5 days, or what is your...
Yeah, so it's a 9-day trip, the day either side for traveling, mm-hmm. 5 days up and 2 days down. So you go, the whole idea is you go what they say, pole pole, which is slowly, slowly, because of the altitude, because of course it's about 6,000 meters to be the difficult factor. You've got to stay very, very hydrated, which for the people with ileostomies is important anyway, but to stop altitude sickness, we all have to be very hydrated. There's going to be lots of issues, you know, like what do you do with all your stoma bags when you take them off? We're going to have to put double wrap them because you can't leave them on the mountain. And, you know, there's lots and lots of extra things that we've got to take into account. And we've got lots of different reasons why people have got stomas on this trek. One lady, her bowel burst on the M4 in the fast lane, was perforated.
Oh,
ended up with stoma. Another lady was in for a cesarean for her baby, and they discovered she had cancer in the cesarean. So she went straight into chemo and ended up with stoma. Crohn's and colitis, a few people have got them as a result of that. I've got mine from childbirth. You know, there's just, and as people, as your listeners will know, there are so many different reasons why you have stomas. So we're taking a documentary maker with us to sort of record it.
Yeah, I was just about to say, how are you going to document it? Because obviously we're all keen on seeing imagery from that time and also obviously hearing about it. So I'm going to give you an open invitation after your trek to share that with our listeners and to come back onto Stoma for Life.
Yeah, because I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love to. And, you know, the one who person doesn't make it to the top might be me, and that is fine.
You know, I doubt that, because I know what you've done and what you're capable of, and I know the power of the mind, and I know you've got a very, very positive mindset. So I don't think so.
We'll see. Altitude is its own boss, but we'll
yeah.
see.
No, of course. Now, looking ahead, what would you like to see change in how society talks about stomas and supports those living with one? I always ask this question because there are still so many misconceptions out there. And, you know, I myself, before stoma surgery, was also very ignorant about that topic.
I think, well, it's normalizing, isn't it? Our charity motto is Bila Siri, Bila Eebu, which means no secrets, no shame. Mm-hmm. And that is how people should live their life. And that is how society should allow people to live. So we should just be able to say, we have stoma and we're not bothered. And everyone should say, well, that's great. We're not bothered either. And I think it's really just keeping it very simple like that. And I am always very keen to say, though, I think that a lot of people put themselves under pressure to sort of, like, get their stoma bags out to show that they have embraced having a stoma and to show that they've accepted it. But for me, it's all very, very individual. Everyone's got their own journey. You can keep it as private as you like, and that doesn't mean to say that you're ashamed of it. It's down to personality. So there are gobby northerners like me who are more than happy to shout for them from the rooftops for the people that don't want to do that. And I think every approach is valid. I think that's one thing I always want to say to the ostomy community, you know, there's no pressure. No pressure.
Yeah, absolutely.
To prove anything to anyone.
Absolutely, because that's, you know, society sort of puts you under pressure, or you yourself obviously put yourself under pressure. And there is, like you said, there is actually no pressure because, yeah. And it's also valid if you want to show it, if you want to talk about it, fine.
Yeah.
And if you don't, also fine. But
yeah.
I think it's important for everyone dealing with a subject to know that there are people out there that talk about it, and there are people that you can turn to talk about
yeah.
it. Because I think that is an important part of anyone's journey, is to talk about it. I mean, I've subsequently started working as a life coach for ostomates, because I feel a lot of them they don't actually find the right words in that situation, and they don't actually want to burden anybody else with the subject, and they don't know who to turn to. So I actually thought this is brilliant, because I love speaking to people. I love speaking to people from any walk of life. And I find that's where my passion lies now, to actually guide them and help them on their path, because it might just take longer for some, but there is no one size fits all in any case.
No, there isn't. You know, there isn't. And everyone gets there one way or another. And at whatever point they will get there. I did.
Yeah, you certainly did. Jill, thank you so much for being so open with us, for your story that shows that life doesn't always follow the path we expect. It doesn't mean that the journey has to stop. You've turned something deeply painful into strength, into advocacy, and into an inspiration for others. So whether in the channel, whether in Kenya, or on the path, the trek to Kilimanjaro, it's been an absolute privilege to have you on Stoma for Life, Jill.
Well, thank you very much. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm really, really delighted for you with your life coach for ostomates as well. I think that's a fantastic idea. So thank you for having me on and for putting on such a fantastic show for everybody.
Thank you so much. And I can't wait to hear when you come back from the roof of Africa. Take care. All the best. Bye.